Hello. Good afternoon. My name is Melissa Harris. I'm a business columnist at the Chicago Tribune. And as you can see, we're missing one person who's next to me. So someone will have to make a crack about Grubhub being able to deliver food on time, but their CEO not showing up. No, I'm kidding. He'll be here. He's on his way. So I want to get started by just having everybody introduce themselves. Tell us how long you've been in Chicago, how many employees you have, and Paul, in your case, how big your fund is.
Paulie, partner at a venture capital firm called Lightbank. It's a $200 million fund, and we have 38 companies in our portfolio.
Hi, I'm Tom Ryan. I'm CEO of Threadless. We have about 100 employees. I've been in Chicago for 4 years.
My name is Zach Smith. I'm co-founder and CEO of a web startup called G-Trot in Lightbank's portfolio. And we moved to Chicago just over a year ago when we closed our funding.
And here comes Matt Maloney of Grubhub.
Missed the delivery time jokes.
Yeah, I know. I assumed they were coming. Just a little bit late. Ran into traffic.
Awesome. We're having you introduce yourself and tell us how long you've been in Chicago, how many employees you have. Basics.
Matt Maloney. I've been in Chicago for about 14 years, actually, and in tech the whole time. We have nearing 300 employees. And for those of you that don't know Grubhub, it's a place to find all the restaurants that deliver to you online and place orders on your laptop or your mobile phone.
And I should ask, so Paul, where were you before you were in Chicago?
I'm sorry. I was in New York City working for NBC Universal in their venture fund.
And same thing. Oh, I'm sorry.
And I moved to Chicago. I was running digital for Playboy Enterprises.
Zach, where were you?
Yeah, I was in New York. We got started actually in Cambridge, Massachusetts. We're working out of New York for a year before we got our funding.
And Tom?
I was also in New York.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, I wanted to do a brief, just a history of Chicago tech in 90 seconds. And in the beginning, there was... basically, which is the 1980s, we have Motorola and Navtech. And by the 1990s, we had had a couple of hits. Most notably, it was a company called Platinum Technology, which was run by a guy named Flip Filipowski, and it sold for $3.5 billion in 1999. At that time, it was the largest software company sale in history. And then there's Mark Andreessen, the co-writer of Mosaic. He graduated from the University of Illinois in 1993 and immediately made a beeline for the Valley. And his subsequent success was kind of like a wake-up call. It was like, holy shit, we can do this, and as long as our people don't flee for the Valley. And then quietly, you had companies like Peapod, Classified Ventures, and Orbitz building businesses off dial-up Prodigy connections. And then the bubble hit, and it took out companies like Starbelly, which was run by two of the three founders of Groupon, Eric Lefkofsky and Brad Keywell. And then you had another venture, Divine Inc., which was Filipowski's second effort, which was one of the last tech companies to go public before the bubble hit. And it quickly became what VC Matt McCall described as, quote, a $1 billion smoking hole in the ground. And so as Eric put it, Eric Lefkofsky, Chicago's tech scene in the wake of the bubble was, he put it, pretty much dead. And this is what he said, quote, I was the guy rowing the boat, and for me, it was pretty much a decade of rowing nowhere. But up from the ashes came serial entrepreneurs like Matt Maloney, who frankly didn't care that the world was falling apart. And Chicago has since had 45 tech companies sell for $100 million or more. And a lot of those exits had their genesis in what people might call the dark years. So with that said, we're here to kind of deconstruct where Chicago's been, where it's at, where it's going. And I want each of you to pinpoint a strength and a weakness in Chicago's tech community and tell me what can be done to fix the weaknesses. So I'm going to go ahead and start.
Yes, sure, I'll start. Before I do that, though, can I see a show of hands of who's from Chicago?
Yeah, I should have done it.
All right.
Okay.
All right, cool.
Anyone? How about anyone not from Chicago?
Why are you guys here?
Can you code? How about people who aren't from Chicago who can code?
We okay. Want to hire you.
We want give business cards.
Yeah, business cards up here.
No, but I think that the strength and the weakness, one of our strengths is that when you sign up for a project in Chicago, you really get involved and you really like the people you work with and the problems you're solving, and there's not a lot of jumping between companies. So those of you in Chicago, I mean, think about yourself and your friend. I mean, how many of you have worked at Groupon and at Grubhub and at Orbitz? Like, there just aren't many people like that. So I think it's a strength in that there's just a lot of inertia on our teams, which is great for knowledge, keeping the knowledge in the organization. But that's also what I'd say our weakness is, because I would love to see more resumes from Threadless or from Groupon. And I know that might be a short-term pain because I'd lose some of my good people. But long-term, I think that's going to foster a much more rich ecosystem for all of us.
Paul.
Just side note, did anyone else realize our hashtag says sex new mafia? It's really random. Sorry. Strength and weakness. Strength, you know, Groupon actually is really defining the working class of Chicago, I think. And what I mean by that is like young 24-year-old people that have a hard work ethic and willing to grind. So I think that's a strength. So if you think about businesses that have taken off, or can take off, there's a great labor base in Chicago of young people that really into the startup scene. We're really willing to work hard, and there's a great sales culture there. I think the obvious weakness is developer talent. So it's getting better, but you know, we're not anywhere near the strength of Silicon Valley or even New York to a certain extent. So would love to see us shoring up development talent in Chicago.
Yeah, I think a definite strength is that for a world-class city, Chicago has a really low cost structure. So I agree with the talent points that were just raised. But you know, Threadless, we have an entire city block with about 50,000 square feet of building space, which houses our headquarter offices, but it also has our fulfillment warehouses. And it's in the West Loop. It's right outside the downtown center of the city. And we're paying the same amount that friends of mine in New York and the Bay Area pay for a pretty small office or a medium-sized office. So just what you can do with your money in terms of building a company in Chicago. And, of course, you could say that about, you know, doing that in the middle of nowhere, but Chicago is a world-class city, so being able to do that in a world-class city, I think, is a huge strength. And it's not just real estate costs. It's costs in a variety of areas. I think, I don't know if it's a weakness so much, but I think just something to keep in mind is that the ecosystem, while really exciting and growing fast, is still fragile and early. I built a company during the dot-com boom in New York, and when everything collapsed, it was really like everyone in New York looked at it like it was a huge mistake. Like, why did we do this? And unlike in Silicon Valley, where I think people look at tech cycles as a natural evolution, and they just bounce back, and they know that it's going to come back again. So that sort of sense of history in Silicon Valley of being knowing that you need to be committed to building what you believe in, and knowing that things will work out if you stay committed in those dark times is super important. And I think that right now, Chicago, New York, which also is going through a huge resurgence, you could be forgiven for thinking that there was never a dark time in New York, but there were 6 years of you know, very little going on compared to today. And I just think that it's important that we maintain the focus on really being committed to building things and not sort of letting this just be another fad.
Okay. Yeah, I would just add to that I think from what I've seen in the past year and a half, we have, I'd say, at least 24 really ambitious people who have fully dedicated themselves to growing and fostering Chicago's tech community, whether it's like Kevin Wheeler at this new tech center, the various sort of media companies that have come up around Tech Week and Built in Chicago that are really fostering a sense of community, Technori among them, the Pritzker family and the Groupon founders that really want to bring more entrepreneurs to Chicago. And the fact that we have so many people that have literally spent all day long trying to figure out how to grow this community is a huge plus, in addition to what these other guys said. Now, I would say weakness from the tech standpoint is we always miss more developers. I think Chicago could really use a couple companies like you have on the West Coast, the Googles, Facebook, Microsofts of the world, that take all of the CS college graduates, put them through a couple year rigorous program, and then flush them out into the startup ecosystem with real experience developing often for the web and complex sort of live applications. That's something we don't really have now. And so while we have some great CS departments, startups like mine that have six people aren't in a position to take, you know, newbies in and sort of rear them in the way that, you know, my friends from school went to Microsoft, went to Google, went to Facebook to do. So I'd love to see some, you know, Groupon might become that as they become more tech heavy. I would love to see maybe some other tech companies build some R&D or development centers in Chicago.
How many of you have taken capital from California? One. Okay. How many of you have taken capital from New York? One. Okay. We have four early stage funds or VCs here that I think are 100 million plus. I'm thinking Sandbox, Lightbank, New World Ventures, and Arch Venture Partners, which does more of the hard sciences. What do we have enough capital here? Polly, do we have enough capital here?
To do what?
To blow up.
No, I mean, you need outside capital. There's no doubt about it. I think New World is doing some interesting stuff in the later stage, but like, I think we have plenty of capital at the early stage, like the lower cost of development, all that sort of stuff. And you can get a company to a good point of traction for under $1 million now. So I would argue the early capital is there. It's really, in terms of late stage capital, both these guys have kind of blazed the trail of outside capital. So if you look at just in the last year, Braintree raised $30 million from Excel, Mu Sigma raised $140 million from Sequoia. Trunk Club raised another $10 million. So real financings from outside investors are happening, and we think that's a really healthy thing for the environment.
So we like to think of ourselves kind of as like the Silicon Prairie, but I think it's natural for no.
We don't
think of us as a
that is wrong.
It's the worst term.
Well, I was going to ask because Matt, you told me you know we should not be the Silicon Prairie, right? And say why we should not look.
I think that. I told you that if you bring it up, there's a non-zero probability I get up and leave. No, I think that's bogus. The whole Silicon Prairie concept, it doesn't make any sense because at one time, the Valley was fantastic because of the amplification. And you would go to cocktail parties or go to a bar and you'd see other people from other startups and you just talk about really cool shit that no one else knew about. And now that's all distributed. You know, that's the media is distributed, the talent is distributed, the kind of the excitement around the startup capital and making $1 million off a startup, like that's not just in the Valley anymore, that's everywhere. And so even the startup capital is everywhere. So we don't need to recreate what was created in the late 90s in the Valley. We need to forge our own path and understand where we come from. And we're, you know, as Chicago entrepreneurs, it's different.
What's the difference between a Valley startup and a Chicago startup?
I'll just keep talking. The Valley startups that I see, they tend to be more like novel concepts, kind of like very abstract. You get things like Twitter, which is, I mean, world-changing from a communications perspective, but they didn't really do it to solve a problem. They did it because it was cool. You know, and I think that a lot of the startups coming out of Chicago are solving a problem, whether it's what I do or what Mason did, you know, or Threadless when it was founded out of Chicago. I mean, there was a real, like, problem that was solved there.
What do you think, Zach? Difference?
The biggest difference is that I think a lot of Chicago's biggest successes, including the two represented on the stage, weren't necessarily at their core hard technology companies in the same way that you see in the Valley. I think we have, like Paul said, a very strong base of young labor that goes that can be used to seed sales and marketing based organizations as Groupon started, and so that seems to be a big difference. Paul, would you agree that in the Lightbank portfolio, a lot of the companies are actually not at their core technology companies, but are rather bringing sort of novel revenue models, business models to kind of other types of businesses?
I mean, I think they're applying technology to solve business problems. I mean, I think that's fundamentally that's what it is. And it's a different type of business than a Silicon Valley startup. I mean,
would Groupon have ever been able to get off the ground in the Valley, do you think?
Not to the extent that it has.
And why do you think, what do you think we brought?
I mean, I think it's a labor base, right? If you think about the sales force that they put together and scaled up so quickly, it was kind of like the perfect storm because Eric and Brad had experience building those sorts of teams. Mm-hmm. And so the velocity in which they put those teams together and stepped in the gas on the revenue side, I don't think you could have done that in Silicon Valley. I don't think you could have had the talent base that pulled that together. I mean, in the same way that I don't think Twitter could have been built in Chicago. You just don't have the engineering base, the raw talent. And in Chicago, you have that young labor force I was talking about. So,
but maybe, for the exit, like when there's a liquidity event, right, and all of a sudden these folks, you know, get some money. Does it hurt us though that it's a marketing sales driven operation in terms of the ability then for those people then just to go and recode a new website and redevelop a new website and relaunch more? Do you think that hurts us on the back end of liquidity events, or do you think it doesn't?
No, because it's just a different skill set. There's a ton of like guys coming that will come out of Groupon with awesome sales and marketing experience and operations experience and how to scale teams, and that's an awesome skill set. So, you know, is that going to help build the next Twitter in Chicago? No, but there's huge amounts of opportunity for these types of businesses, and I think you'll see over the next 5 years, you'll see a handful more that will pop up to that scale.
Do you think one thing when I talk about Chicago to people outside of Chicago, the first thing I'll mention a company and they'll say, "That's in Chicago? I had no clue that was in Chicago." Can you name like an example of something that maybe the people who aren't from Chicago or even the people who are like wouldn't realize is in their backyard? Can anybody think of any examples?
People always say that about Threadless. But another one I think that comes up a lot is 37 Signals. People don't often realize that they're there.
Orbitz. I mean, there's cars.com, apartments.com. You know, Bump was started in Chicago, and then they moved out to the Valley. Like, there's tons of businesses in Chicago.
What the community is starting to coalesce. Matt, you're involved in the Firestarter Fund, I think. And so talk about that. And talk about built in Chicago in 1871 and a bunch of these community things that the community is getting together to do and why you think that matters, why you're involved.
It's exciting because there's just a lot of energy around the startup space right now. And as Groupon has gone through the incredible growth projection that they have, I think everyone's looking around and saying, there's going to be a lot happening, not only now, but in the future. And so, you know, once the lockup's over, I think that there's going to be a lot of cash in the community. And it's not just technologists who are going to go and code the next website. It's people who've been involved in that experience. And the visceral feeling of being on the team that went whoosh, you know, and all of a sudden you make $1 million and you want to turn around and find the next startup. And so there's going to be a lot more angel investing in the next year than there has been in a very long time. And so I think people saw that coming, and so the Firestarters Fund is a way for entrepreneurs to take some of the money that they've made in projects and put it back into the ecosystem. And I forget what the amount is, but it's a really interesting project. If you guys are looking for money, I'd go talk to them. Matt Moog's running that too.
Do you feel like there's a gap in early stage venture capital right now in Chicago?
I don't think there's I like what you said. There's plenty of money for early stage. And when you're in early stage, you want to take local money because it's a higher touch relationship. Like if I was starting a company, I'd want to go to Paul because, I mean, I could call him up or go out to lunch and go to the office and meet other like early stage projects. But then we went to the West Coast because we wanted to diversify our board and our investor base. I mean, if we just took Chicago money, A, B, C, D, and E, you just have this one perspective on your board, and it's not healthy.
So there's something out there called Code Academy, started by Neil Sales Griffin, and it's all about like a high intensity, you know, 3-month or 2-month Ruby on Rails class. A lot of people up here have mentioned the difficulty of finding, you know, developer talent. So talk to me about what it's really like out there to try and hire these folks. Like, where do you look? What are you looking for? Zach, go ahead.
Yeah, always definitely looking for engineering talent. We're lucky to have a pretty incredible team, though it took us, you know, 6 months after moving to Chicago to really start getting the right people on board. My co-founder and I, Brittany, would go to events almost every week to sort of meet the community and network. So there's a huge advantage of starting out in Chicago if you have a network here. We're now starting to get a pipeline from some of the early people we hired that's bringing some great talent to our organization. Honestly, 8 months ago, there was some decent talent on 37 Signals job board we hired, you know, from early on. It's the market is so tight right now that drives almost zero qualified applications. You really have to be talking to people that are already engaged in work about, you know, the awesomeness of startups and coming our way.
You've talked to me before about the difficulty about, you know, kind of convincing people to leave like the Fortune 500 world. Do you think that's, talk about
talk a little bit about the difficulty of hiring because of that.
I think that inertia is always a challenge when you're looking to hire really talented folks. We just put an offer out to someone who was really talented, and they actually went to their employer to give 2 weeks' notice, and they upped their salary by like $40,000 a year, and they came back to us and they're like, unless you match, I'm not coming over. We're like, I'm not playing that game. But in Chicago, there's the banks, there's the major companies, the Fortune 500s, and there's a lot of really smart people there who have solved similar problems to what we're solving every day. And so looking to that as a talent pool, the one thing that we have over those big companies is that we're exciting. We're a smaller, more nascent company that's making real-time big decisions and flexible thinking, and the growth opportunity is much larger. And so, I've had success pulling some people out of these big companies, but I've obviously had some failures too.
Okay.
But the talent's there.
So we've talked about whether we think there's a gap in the early stage funding, and everybody says no. But Paul, what about from a VC standpoint? You guys are pretty Midwest focused, but you're starting to do a lot of deals out west and in the Northeast. So is there a lack of good investment options for VCs in Chicago?
No, I mean, so out of our 38 investments, just about 50% are in Chicago. So I don't think we don't look at it and say we have to do X number in Chicago. We just happen to find good deals, and wherever they are, we end up doing them. But
have you found the quality to be pretty comparable, like the quality of a Chicago startup and the quality of a Silicon Valley startup or a New York startup?
It depends.
Can you give me one or two examples?
I mean, if you're looking for like a strong engineering team, odds are that you're not going to find them in Chicago. And if they are, they're either well-funded and are planning to move, or someone has discovered them. And I think that's a challenge. I think the feedback that we always get, we host these monthly CEO forums, and the feedback that we always get from our Silicon Valley CEOs about the Chicago CEOs is that they've actually spent a lot more time thinking about the business rather than the product. And I always found that to be really interesting, because from day one, it seems like the Chicago CEOs are really thinking about how does the business model evolve over time, whereas I think in Silicon Valley, they're really focused on the user experience. So they're not worried about how to make money on it. They're not worried about, 2 years, how do we crank this thing up? They're very product iteration driven. Like, how do we get our customer to love this product? So just distinct.
What do we need to do next? What do we need to do next? What do we need?
Grubhub to exit and make a shitload of money. That'll be number two, in recent exits. So I think those sorts of things are high profile. I always say Andrew Mason was the first rock star CEO in Chicago, where you'd walk down the street with him and people would recognize him and come up and talk to him. And these guys are right there. So we're really looking forward for them to IPO or have a huge exit. So
what else? So other than you obviously want that to happen.
Sounds good. I have no equity in Grubhub, by the way. So.
What else do you think we need?
I think that we need to, like I said earlier, I think it would be great to see more cycling of developers and really, I think the safety net's there. And by safety net, I mean when you talk to people and you say, you're phenomenal at what you do, and you've been working at this hedge fund running black box technology for 15 years, you need to be doing startup work. And they say, yeah, but what if it fails? And I think the safety net's there in that there's enough startups in the community that if one fails, you can easily kind of roll over to the next one. And I think it's there, but it really hasn't been utilized that much. So we kind of need, Paul's saying we need a big success, and I'm saying, well, we kind of need a failure that's okay. It's okay that this one company failed, because all their engineers and all their marketing people rolled over into GTrot or Threadless or Grubhub, and we said, okay, you had that experience, you failed, you learned a shit ton, now come work for me and let's do it right.
What do you guys think?
If he's taking the success spot, neither of us want to take the failure. I mean, I think Chicago is doing the right things. I think we need to, I mean, all, everything that was mentioned in terms of the accelerators, the new investment both within Chicago and from VCs outside of Chicago, more people leaving their jobs. And I think it's an interesting time right now in Chicago because while it may be difficult to get certain people to leave a corporate job that has all that security, we're still at a stage where entrepreneurial tech companies are still small enough relative to everything else that it's exciting, and you can tell really interesting stories about great workplaces, and there's that relative advantage you have that I think you don't have as much in San Francisco, where everybody's got a ping pong table in their office and it's all sort of startup culture. So I think there's sort of like a relative advantage to pulling those people out. So I think a lot of things are working in the city's favor right now. I just think, I come back to my earlier comment, I just think it needs to be a long-term commitment. And the more this stuff tends to happen, the more entrepreneurial contagiousness happens. You know, when a few of my friends at a corporate job start going to a start, when one person goes, they're kind of like the oddball. When a few people leave, it starts becoming this, well, why is everybody doing this? This must be a really good thing to do. And then more and more go. So I think we're in early stages, even though Chicago has a long tech history, we're in early stages of a real resurgence that if the momentum keeps up and people keep committed even during a downturn, will position Chicago well for the long term.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with Tom. I think to some extent we need some time. For outside the Chicago tech community, I think the culture as a whole in Chicago is starting to accept that, you know, startups, you know, I think to some of my friends I have who like went to the Big Ten schools and are on like more, you know, vocational career paths in Chicago, hadn't really heard of like tech startups when I first moved here over a year ago. And of course, there's always been you know, a number of successful companies, but I think you know when you can go out to a bar and tell somebody you work at a startup, and that's not like a conversation killer. I think we'll be in a lot better position, particularly on the recruiting side, to start bringing people out of their more sort of institutional enterprise type roles and into the startup world.
Okay,
I mean, you know, on that point, Zach and Brittany have done an incredible job. I would put their product team up against pretty much any Silicon Valley like company at their stage. So I don't know how they did it, but in Chicago, they've just done an incredible job of recruiting. So it can be done. Okay. So
let's start taking some audience questions, and I have some more. Do we have some audience questions? Yes. We have a microphone coming.
I'm running a startup right now in Chicago, and I just want to know if you guys could address the one difficulty that I've had in the year and a half that I've been doing it, which is that we're very well known for having an attitude of nobody wants nobody that nobody sent. And I think that extends not just from our political climate, but to our business climate. And I wondered with you guys, particularly the three founders, I know some of you are not Chicago natives. I happen to be one. But did you find that that you don't have the progressive business community in Chicago that you do in, say, San Francisco or, you know, or the Valley? Did you find that as a problem?
You didn't find it as what of a business community? I didn't hear that word before then.
Progressive business community.
He's saying that Chicago has this syndrome in the political world of nobody wants nobody who wasn't sent. It's like, you know, who sent you? And if you haven't been sent by someone, essentially with clout, that you're not welcomed, and he's saying that he thinks that applies in the business community.
Is that more for the founders?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
I think that's bullshit too. But
okay, there we go. Okay. Next question.
I never had any clout at any point in my life, so.
You do, but okay.
So, I mean, I feel like that's kind of an excuse. Like if you look at the vast majority of founders of our startups, none of them have any political clout. I mean, no knock against any of them here, but they just kick ass. I mean, they don't make any excuses. They just grind, and they never think that something is a barrier for them. So I think
Accelerate is doing a great job of really building competition-based, you know, awareness. And the Accelerate companies are fantastic. And I don't know if a lot of you guys know, but we actually acquired one of them. And the founder of that company is sitting back there, Colin. Hi. But it was a phenomenal team, and it was a mobile technology startup, and it was hardcore, and it was really good, and they had phenomenal developers, and that's why we bought them, because they're fucking awesome, and that's it.
Yep.
Hi, I'm actually a student. I don't go to school in Chicago, but it's generally where I try and spend my summers if I ever can. Unfortunately, I'm not a developer. I've been, you know, trying to pick up some skills here and there on the side. Last summer, I had the opportunity actually to meet Neil and Mike, and they were very, very nice guys. But I was wondering if you guys think that there's a place for, you know, students and, you know, especially students who don't necessarily have developer talent in the Chicago startup scene, and if so, where that is.
I mean, I think we occasionally do internships at Threadless for business roles, and I think if you're really excited about getting your foot in the door, finding a company that you really care about, you care about what they're doing, and just offering up your services for you know, a short period. You can't work for free for forever, obviously, but if you can identify a company and get your foot in the door, a lot of times the best way is just to intern for a little while. Otherwise, you can apply for the roles, but if you don't have any experience, then you need to set yourself apart somehow. That's why I think you know, doing something like that for a short period is oftentimes a good thing.
I want to ask another question. You probably each of you know somebody who's left for the Valley. Why did they leave? What do you think the number one reason is people leave Chicago's tech community?
I think sometimes... So a guy that we know who founded Siri, actually, Doug Kitlas, he came up with the idea for Siri in Chicago, and he was working at Motorola, or he had just left Motorola, but he then went out to the Valley to take the technologies that Stanford Research Institute had and to also work with you know, world-class technologists at the sort of intersection of artificial intelligence and other technologies that Siri needed to be successful, speech recognition technologies. So he moved out there, I think, because he had a specific, very cutting-edge and amazing idea, and there were technologies that existed out there and people that he thought he could really... bring together on the team in order to build a great company. But he's since moved back to Chicago. I think that's a great sign for Chicago that, you know, he would like to build his next company, at least from Chicago, or maybe it's going to be, you know, sort of in both places. But nonetheless, I think technology and people is sometimes a reason. But I think when you see someone like that moving back after the success that he's had, it's a great sign for what you can do in Chicago.
Just real quick, earthquakes. I think people move to San Francisco to experience earthquakes.
Zach, you were going to tell
me. Yeah, I think there can be some pressure around like a Series B raise for a company that doesn't necessarily have deep roots in Chicago. You know, we've made the rounds, just started to talk to some Valley firms. And the question pops up, are you guys willing to relocate? And there's just so many people that can do a $5, $10, $15 million funding in California compared to Chicago, where, like you said, there's, what, three or four $100 million funds. And so there's definitely just more gravity around the financing part of the ecosystem out in the Valley, and that can definitely move teams to the extent that they need to raise capital from there.
Why'd you come here? You moved here. Why'd you move here?
I think it was like three quick reasons. Well, it was so much more affordable. We raised our seed round. It was well under $1 million from LightBank. And, you know, we had to build a tech team and get some office space. And the idea of doing that in Manhattan, where we were living at the time, would have probably realistically gotten us half the time that it got us in Chicago. You know, we pay ourselves, you know, pretty meager salaries and yet live a mile from downtown. And it's just a much more livable city on a startup salary. Two, you know, there was something nice about being a slightly larger fish in a much smaller pond. Particularly being a LightBank company, there's some gravity there that helps with recruiting, and certainly that's turned out to be true. And I had a third thing, but I don't really remember what it was. It wasn't the weather, I'll tell you that.
Do you wish, Tom, do you wish you could go back to New York?
I mean, I think Chicago is Threadless is a great Chicago company. I'm from New York. I obviously have friends and family there and ties there, but I moved to Chicago because Threadless was here, and we think that continuing to build Threadless in Chicago is the right thing to do.
Okay. Questions? Yeah.
Hi. I'm from San Francisco, but I want to move to Chicago. And I have done business development and marketing for different companies, and so it's very easy to see the talent flow in San Francisco. And Matt mentioned earlier that it's not the case in Chicago. I was just wondering why. And do you hire outsiders?
I cannot really hear you.
Say that again. I heard the end. You said, do you hire outsiders?
Yes, because I'm from San Francisco, right. And I want to move to Chicago. And I have done different. I've been in different roles, marketing and business development for different kinds of companies, hardware, internet, social media. So it's very easy to see the talent flow between yes. Silicon Valley companies. And why is that not so in Chicago?
I don't know, to tell you the truth.
And you would hire outsiders, though, of course.
No, obviously.
Yeah.
I don't think we're hiring in biz dev right now, but you can check on my careers page. Anyone, we're always hiring. I don't know. I wish I knew. That's a really deep question. Is why don't people from Grubhub? Why aren't they applying to Groupon to their exec roles? Or why don't we see more transference among the kind of employee pool among all these things? And I think it comes back to. Fundamentally, that scares me. I have a really strong team, and I don't want to lose any of them. I feel a lot of affinity for the people who work for Grubhub, and I know all of them, and I feel like they really like their job, and it's really exciting. And so, on one hand, you don't want to foster that, but on the other hand, if you step back and you say, okay, what's Chicago and the entrepreneurial environment going to be 5 or 10 years from now? You do need that cross pollination, and Groupon has gone through some amazing growth, and the challenges they faced pre-IPO and the press and all of that. People who experienced that, and that was their day-to-day job, it's almost like they were tempered through that process. And I would love to tap into some of that experience, but it's really a double-edged sword.
Yep.
Hi, Neil Fueling from Chicago. I am curious about the state of politics in Chicago in terms of what it means for startups in Chicago. A friend of mine wrote an article on Cranes about Sears getting $150 million in tax breaks to stay put and be encouraged to stay in Illinois. His recommendation was they use that money for startup funds instead. Just curious what you guys think about things that... Like maybe one thing you could ask the mayor of Chicago, if you could ask him to change something in the business environment in Chicago, what would you ask him to do? If you could talk to the governor of Illinois, what would you tell him?
I wrote about 10 articles last year on the tax breaks for Sears and CME Group. I would say that in the current mayor, I can't believe I'm saying this, but you have someone who's very, very supportive of technology and tech startups. I think that he has, given everything, and Troy Hennikoff is here, and he would probably be able to be more specific, but I think the mayor has given all the support, everything they've asked for, or what he could give to that. In general, I think he is doing his best to lure businesses and jobs to Chicago. I think that the fact of the matter is that when it comes to tax breaks for startups, which the state just passed one last year for R&D, the state just implemented a new R&D tax credit last year. I think that we just are generally dealing with a funding morass in the state of Illinois that is going to hamper any and all new initiatives moving forward. I think that's just the sad truth. If anyone else was to jump in on that.
Last I checked, California was almost bankrupt.
Right.
And they're fine. So
yeah.
I think the other aspect, Zach, have you and I ever talked about Chicago tax credits or Illinois tax credits?
No.
Yeah. Right. I mean, if that's high on your priority list, you probably shouldn't be doing a startup.
Yeah.
Yeah. I talk to Rahm every now and then, and when I do have a chance to talk to him, I say, put in more bike lanes. And he didn't really know what I was saying until he actually came to our office, and we have this special room, which is a bike room that has, hooks on the walls. And he kind of came, and he's like, oh, I get it. The employees that are important to you want to ride their bike to work. I'm like, yes, thank you very much. And so we're working with him and trying to push more bike lanes. So if you're a driver and you're all pissed off about those weird lanes on the right, you can blame me. Sorry.
From a hiring perspective, what would you say is harder, programming talent or UX?
I think there's something wrong with that microphone.
Okay.
Say that again. Programming talent or UX, what's more important?
What's harder? What's harder to hire for?
Is it what's more important, or what's it harder to hire for? You guys are the hiring manager. What do you think?
We have a great UX guy, so we're looking for always more developers. I don't know. Hard to say.
I think UX is a more specialized skill, and so it's. For me, it's harder to find UX.
Interesting. But you have far fewer UX people than developers overall.
That's true.
Right? There's like probably 1 to 4 or 5, maybe more.
Do you think UX is more important?
They're both important, yeah.
Who's your favorite child?
I think they're both hard to hire for.
One of my UX guys is in the room, and my developers aren't, so let's say UX.
Hi, guys. I run a staffing firm in Chicago and New York and San Francisco for interactive people, and I can tell you in Chicago that the number one request and also where we have the most shortage is the developers, the front-end coders and developers, followed closely by the UX talent. So that seems to be where the big shortages are.
Is there anything, do you think there's something, someone had brought up the universities, I think there was a student, you know, constantly things that people are telling me is that they want greater connectivity between U of I and U of C and Northwestern, and those students, getting to those students earlier and talking to them about Chicago Tech earlier and getting them excited about going to startups earlier. What do you think can be done? Maybe you disagree with me, but what do you think can be done to shore up like and build bigger, greater ties? Zach, do you want to jump in?
Sure. I think part of that's a long-term investment. I mean, to the extent that you can talk to these people now about, you know, the allure of startups and get them into the ecosystem in 5 years when they have some on-the-ground training and can really contribute at a startup the size of GTrot and many of other Lightbank's companies, I think that's great. Lightbank's made great efforts in the past, let's say 6 months, right, Paul, to send down on recruiting. You guys go on recruiting foyers like once a month to some of these schools. There hasn't been a ton of interest, though, on the side of portfolio companies to take on like senior college students onto their development teams, I think, because we just need people who from day one can hit the ground running.
Right.
Which is why, I mean, speaking of tax breaks, maybe you can give a $10 million tax break to anyone that's going to provide 100 or more, you know, CS jobs to, you know, area seniors or something, you know. I don't know how that would work, but I think getting people that are 2 years, 3 years of experience is a huge issue right now.
We try to, or we support, I think the ITA, Illinois Technology Association, is doing something to get programming or computer science majors to get jobs, essentially what it is. So we support a hackathon every year for that.
Cool.
Okay. And it kind of drums up some interest. We hired a great person last year from that. But I think what you were saying is accurate. It's like, you kind, as a startup, you don't want to really train someone. You know, you want them to hit the ground running. Having done major projects before, and you can just give them a set of goals or use cases and just do it.
Another question right there. Yep.
So I'm a coder earning my MBA, and so my question for you is it better off spending time rehashing Ruby on Rails and building up PHP or understanding the sales, marketing, and strategy side of business?
Sorry. I'm only laughing because I get 3 emails a week from MBAs looking for jobs, and I pay like recruiters $10,000 to find me a developer. So I would stick with developing. Yeah.
Agree. Actually, if you're really smart, MBA that can code, you should approach all the other MBAs to pay you to teach them how to code, because
that's like the biggest takeaway here.
I saw an email the other day that was like, Tenshare signs a startup is failing, and it was like has more than 2 MBAs.
Other questions? Okay, there's some up here.
I'm just sort of curious. I have a bunch of family from Chicago and everything, but I live here in Austin, and I see Austin as sort of a parallel, you know, middle of the country city with Chicago, but at the same time, just from hearing what you guys say, it sounds like we do have more of a healthy startup climate. I mean, I feel like everyone I meet is working for a startup here. Do you guys also have, I mean, does Austin ever enter your mind as another place to open an office? Do you have trouble recruiting against Austin because the weather is better? I don't know, since we're here. You guys keep saying here, like you're in Chicago, which is really funny.
We bring Chicago with us.
We bring Chicago with us.
I mean, Grubhub's in Chicago, or in Austin. We don't have an office here, but we typically don't open offices in most of the cities. We're in like 300 cities right now, so it's...
It seems to me like a lot of startups that scale sort of city by city, obviously Groupon, I think they now have a portfolio company called Belly Card, will often pick Austin in like their list of top 5 cities because it's so, you know, geographically interesting because there's so many early adopters. It really is a tech community here. I grew up in Austin, actually. I had my high school prom in this room 7 years ago.
He organized it. He told me earlier he organized it.
I organized it. Yeah, we had 2 rooms. It was really nice. And so think about coming. Yeah, I would love to come back to Austin someday, for sure. It's a great city.
Yeah, we have a lot of customers here, but we serve the world from Chicago.
Question.
Sure. So my name is Amanda, and I have a tech startup out of Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and I'm working with Silicon Prairie News and Startup Iowa to build a stronger entrepreneurial ecosystem in that part of the Midwest. And we look at Chicago as definitely a hub to connect into a bigger national network. And I'm wondering, from your perspective, inside the core of the hub, if you see opportunities for us to connect in and collaborate and be a part of what's going on and growing in Chicago.
It's a great question. I also had one on here saying that, you know, if you're in, you know, Michigan or Cedar Rapids or St. Louis, you know, what's the most important thing that you think those communities can do to get, like, the critical mass that's needed? So hers and that one, if you wanted to jump
on. Sure. I mean, it's hard to participate in the community from outside the community, just fundamentally. But as an entrepreneur, you know, outside of a major metro area, I would say travel a lot. Go to New York, go to San Francisco, go to Chicago. Meet as many people as you can, network your butt off, and then try to get as many entrepreneurs on your board as early as possible, because you want to take advantage of their experience and their network. And the sooner you can put people who've done it before, and hopefully successfully, but not necessarily required, close to you, the better off you're going to be.
Anybody else want to jump in?
Yeah, I would just say, I mean, this is my first startup, and I can't imagine doing this outside of a community like we have in Chicago, and particularly at LightBank, working in a space with 7 other companies, where I wasn't surrounded by that. And so it's definitely, I mean, I don't know if you feel like it's an uphill battle sometimes, you know, forging your own path there. You know, move to Chicago. We'd love to have you.
Other questions? Yeah.
Paul, you made an interesting comparison earlier where you're saying about Chicago founders and CEOs maybe too focused on the business model, whereas people out west are more focused on user experience. What suggestions would you give to Chicago founders and CEOs who were too focused potentially on the business model? Maybe you need to take a step back and focus more on user experience.
No, I didn't say that. I wasn't saying that they were too focused. I just said they were focused on it. So I make money. I mean, at the end of the day, that's like the best defense. If you can make money, no one can say anything about your business. So whether it's through great product or business model, like ultimately try to make money.
There's a difference between user experience and product, too. Because you were saying user experience, and he kept saying product. But there's a significant difference between the two.
Question. I thought I saw a hand.
I have a question for the audience, actually. How many of you guys work for startups right now? How many work for corporations? And for someone who works for... How about her over there? Yeah.
Cold call.
Cold call. You work for... What do you do for the corporation?
I actually work for... I work for State Farm. Essentially, now
I'm blushing. Oh, my gosh. I work for State Farm, but I work for Nextdoor, which is a community space.
You work for Nextdoor?
Yes, I work for Nextdoor.
Silicon Valley Nextdoor. The company Nextdoor?
Nextdoor is a part of State Farm Corporation,
I see.
And it's a free community space for people to come and work, and we provide financial education and literacy around those issues.
And have you thought about joining a startup?
Actually, I was going to ask the question because we have a ton of people and entrepreneurs and tech people that come and work out of our space a lot. So it's really interesting to see all of the cool ideas that are coming out of Chicago. It's very interesting, but I've never really given thought.
You haven't
to
given, why not?
No good ideas coming out of this brain, I guess. And I don't think there's anything that would make me unique enough to set out a product base.
When you started your business, like, was it what it is now? Is it what you thought that would be?
Of course. You're not an entrepreneur if you say no to that question.
No idea.
No, absolutely. I think everyone starts a company with the expectation that it's going to be wildly successful and adopted all across the country and be everything you want it to be. And that's kind of the problem you hear about. When you start a company, everyone's like, oh, you're going to fail, and there's this entrepreneur's bias. And yeah, most of them do fail.
Well, I mean,
do
like
do
the idea.
Think,
have you pivoted along the way?
Oh, good God, yeah.
Yeah. So I.
Well, the first business we had was, you know, do a neighborhood guide for delivery.
Yeah.
And then charge restaurants $100 a month just to like have premium listing.
So I think the interesting observation is when I talk to people about why aren't you doing a startup, they said, well, we haven't thought of an amazing idea yet. And reality is I actually think like for 95% of entrepreneurs, the idea changes within 3 months of starting the business. So it's like I think the mindset of I need an unbelievable idea is like totally wrong.
But you need that confidence that Matt just
no, you
said.
Just need to
no,
quit your job.
Oh, yeah. You just need to quit your just. Yeah. Just
I agree.
But, well, I have a question then. What do I do when I quit? Then where do I go?
That's the problem you're solving, though.
Right.
I mean, I'll be forced to solve the problem, I guess.
Yeah.
That's the only. I mean, you do it. I mean, the difference between like an entrepreneur and someone who's not is just the fact that they quit their job and they're doing it, you know, and you...
But I think that takes, like, some self-confidence.
But you have this moment where you think to yourself, oh, shit, I'm not going to make rent. What am I going to do? You know, and it's... Obviously, it's best to do that within the framework of an idea.
I don't...
Something you're working towards.
I don't think these guys will admit it, but I actually... The thing I really admire about entrepreneurs is I actually think they're the most insecure people in the world, but they seem really confident. Like, they just know... And it's just like they do, entrepreneurs do an unbelievable job of like bluffing and playing poker, and they're successful as a result of it. So
I have a bad poker face. Didn't you see me blush when you called me out?
Question. Yeah.
It was really just a comment to what you mentioned, Paul. I come from the advertising industry where I work as a creative. So we're challenged with coming up with thinking pie in the sky ideas, you know, creative ideas. I work in more creative innovation, so coming up with innovation ideas. And one day, I ran into my old friend, Rustam Hakim, and he actually is part of the Accelerate program in Chicago. He just sold his company called Joystickers. And he came up to me, he's like, you know, Pavan, I don't understand. You just throw all these ideas in your advertising space, and 99.9% of them just kind of stay on paper or theoretical. The clients never buy them. Have you ever considered applying those in the startup space? And just recently, you know, we've been brainstorming, and it's this great mesh of the left brain, right brain mentality where I come in to him with ideas, development, and a platform. He brings in the business perspective of it, and it's just been a nice partnership. And I'll be honest, I mean, if any one of them were to take off, I'm happy to quit my job, and I have people here that are from Draft FCB, so bold to say that, but just wanted to comment on that.
So the question was what? Sorry.
No, I was just commenting on what you were sharing. Sorry.
So I actually asked the question on Twitter, and I got a bunch of like ad people asking me, how do ad agencies work with startups? Because we're not pro bono. I don't think you do. I mean, like the notion of an ad agency charging a startup like is an anathema to me. I'm just like vehemently against it. I always tell ad people, if you want to work with startups, join a startup. Like, I don't think there's a place for it. That's just me, but
there's ad agencies now, I think, starting accelerators though, right? To try to invest their own cash and then actually
the game, and so they want to
invest their own cash and then leverage their brand connections for the startup's benefit. But like being an investor is different than sort of
if you have cash, then great,
right.
But just like in-kind services for ad agencies. I mean, it's not a knock against ad agencies, but just the motives are so different. Ad agencies need to make money. They need to like collect cash, and startups don't want to give you cash. So it's just like totally at odds.
Hi, my name is Greg Svitek, and I'm the conductor from this year from the Cincinnati Startup Bus. Are you guys familiar with that at all?
I'm from Cincinnati.
Oh, okay, great. So
I think you meant the bus, not the city.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with the bus, but you can tell me about it later.
That's okay. Basically, one of the things we heard feedback from through the whole startup bus selection process of having, you know, we chose 11 different cities for a bus to leave, you know, from on the 72-hour hackathon competition on the way down to South by Southwest. And one of the things we heard was why not Chicago? Why not Chicago? Why not Chicago? How did Ohio get one and not Chicago? And the biggest thing that we saw as a problem was we didn't necessarily see anyone taking up the ball to actually lead that part of it. So we would love to have one come out of Chicago possibly next year. And so I would just love to know what you guys think we could do to help make that happen. Who would we get in contact with and all those types of things?
You want to do a startup bus out of Chicago?
Yes, as one of the possible cities for next year, yes.
So, let me take a step back. Why do you guys code on the bus? Wouldn't it be easier to, like, code in your room and then take a plane down?
It's an extreme.
I'm not a developer, so it's hard for me to understand that.
Paul, it's a 3-day metaphor for the startup experience.
Yeah, it's a 3-day. And he's right. It's a total 3-day metaphor. You, without having Wi-Fi, different spots. Without having electricity, different spots. Those simulate the different things. And we actually take people on an entrepreneurial journey. Most of them are going through. Like a lot of people are asking, "Hey, I want to quit my job, but I don't know how." That's very common for the type of people we select to be on the bus. They're awesome developers, hackers, or hipsters, but they don't know how to get started. And we provide that value because we take them through, in Ohio, we took them to the Brannery, and we took them to Youngstown Business Incubator in different spots, then all the way down through. So we provide not just the hacking competition, but we also provide a way for people from going from when you get on the bus to getting off the bus, you understand what it possibly could take to do it.
Yeah, so it's really cool. So just tweet at me. My developer actually had to fly to, or my designer had to fly to Boston to take the startup bus down. We would love to have a Chicago bus, so we'll help you out next year for sure.
Sure. Thank you. Appreciate it.
One last question. Wait, is that Colin?
Yeah.
Colin, right back there. Fango, right?
Yeah.
Fango. Colin of Fango.
Yeah, formerly of Fango, now of Grubhub. But I was just, to speak to your point, I was actually on the startup bus, and one of the answers I would give you is a lot of times there's so much going on that you don't necessarily see it all. And so for us, I think it was the first time hearing about Startup Bus. And so for me, like as the manager of innovation for Grubhub, it was something where, you know, Grubhub sent me down there to check it out and see what are people working on. And I literally flew all the way to Baton Rouge, sat in a bus for 72 hours with some of the smartest people I've ever met. No showers, like you said, intermittent Wi-Fi. And it's a very intense experience. And to Paul's point, I think it's different when you're in a hotel room because you can leave, right? Like you get pissed off, you don't want to be there, somebody in your group doesn't like you, you know, someone smells, the bathroom overflows, and you can leave. But on the startup bus, you can't. You have to figure out how to work with that person. Like, and it's people from all over the country. And it's a really good experience. I think we walked away with a lot of good talent. So you talk about, like, how do you recruit talent? Sometimes you have to think outside the box. It's not as simple as just paying someone to go out and find them for you. Sometimes you have to be a little bit more creative or innovative about where you find that talent. And so I would definitely plug Startup Bus. And I think we will probably collectively do one from Chicago, at least from what I saw. It was a pretty amazing experience.
Statistically, taking a road trip versus flying, an event of mortality is twice as likely to happen. So it would really be a shame if a bus full of developers got into an awful accident and we lost like 40 developers from Chicago. That's all I'm saying. I mean, I'd rather that you get a little less productive, get a nice room, and then fly down.
Great. Well, thank you all so much for coming. Let's give a round of applause to the panel.